If progress stalls against the Islamic State terror group, the U.S. military should start embedding troops with forces battling ISIS in Iraq. That's according to Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, about to retire this month after 39 years in the Army. But what's the feasibility of Odierno's recommendation, and would it even work? For some answers, we turn to retired Lieutenant General Dave Barno. He's a former senior American commander of U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan and now a distinguished practitioner in residence at American University. Dave, great to have you back. Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right. So if we have embedded troops, is that basically having troops or boots on the ground, which everyone says the United States should avoid?
Well, embedded troops are certainly no silver bullet. They're, you know, a lineup of Americans that would be in placed inside of Iraqi units, perhaps to help control airstrikes, to give advice on tactical operations, but they'd be very exposed. I think that's the great risk and one of the reasons we haven't done that already. These are units that are on the front line. They're definitely in combat, and if Americans were placed side by side with them, they'd be drawn into combat almost inevitably themselves.
I mean, you probably remember this from doctrine school, but we had a Vietnam War where American troops were, 500,000 were there doing most of the work, and then there was a policy called Vietnamization, which was an attempt to turn the war over to the Vietnamese. This seems like almost like Americanization, taking it away from the Iraquis, or at least the
first
step
toward
that.
We do have American forces there now. They're in headquarters, and they're giving advice to Iraqi commanders, but they're not allowed to go forward onto the battlefield with Iraqi units. Those Iraqi units are not very reliable. They have not, frankly, performed particularly well. ISIS has pushed them off the battlefield in location after location, city after city. So there's significant risk if you do put Americans out there, if those aren't units that have been trained with those Americans and are much more capable than the ones we see out there now. I think the American forces, the small units that might be out there on the ground, could be at great danger. And I think that'll be a significant deterrent to this policy recommendation in the future.
Because, in other words, training Iraqis wherever we train them, at the bases we train them at, and then sending them out, almost like drones or like toys you wind up and send in, just is not working for Iraq. And so the idea behind this would be you would still, in theory, stay out of the combat, but you would be right there kind of egging them on or teaching them right behind the sandbags.
There is one advantage here that I think we shouldn't undercount. That's if you have American spotters for airstrikes forward with the Iraqi units, the effectiveness of those airstrikes, which we've been doing now for well over a year, could increase dramatically. Right now, we can't really tell exactly where those bombs are going from the ground standpoint because we don't have any American eyes out there to actually see where the bombs could be dropped with most effect. So even though we're being very careful about that, we may not be getting the full capability of our air power without having some spotters right there on the front line with the Iraqis. That might be a recommendation, I think, that could be taken under favorable consideration here, maybe more quickly than having ground advisors out there, you know, forward with the Iraqi units.
All right, so as the Marine Corps Commandant, Joe Dunford, becomes the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, do you think this is the biggest thing he's going to have to deal with right now?
I think it's just a major issue, and it's one that's not going away. General Odierno, who retired on Friday as the Army Chief, characterized in a news conference last week the situation on the ground in Iraq as a stalemate. And I think that's a pretty honest characterization. You know, there's no real momentum on either side right now. ISIS has been able to seize major chunks of ground in Iraq, to include some major cities, Mosul, Ramadi, and others that Americans fought for many years ago, and they've consolidated their position. Iraqi offensives have done very little to dent the advances that ISIS has made. So I think right now the situation is unstable, but it's also a bit of a stalemate with neither side having a significant advantage on the ground.
I mean, the chairman, his stated job, his explicit job is to present military options to the president, correct?
That's correct. Absolutely.
And so isn't it important to be able to make recommendations to proceed from a clear policy? And then you can strategize. The question, I guess, is how clear is the policy and what is the policy from, you know, if looking at it, if I'm the new chairman, what do I see as the policy that I'm trying to pursue here and give options to pursue?
Well, you're exactly right. That's a fundamental question. What do we really want to do with ISIS? You know, the president has come out on a number of occasions, and the president himself has been critical of our strategy, of his strategy, of not knowing exactly what we want to achieve here. At different times, he's talked about defeating and destroying ISIS, which is a very, very big bite to take in out of this elephant, maybe well beyond what we can do militarily without having large numbers of Americans on the ground. A more realistic strategic objective might be to contain ISIS in the near term and begin a more comprehensive program of rolling ISIS back that involves our allies, involves more diplomacy, does more covertly against ISIS, perhaps in Syria. We're going to have to look at this as a multi-year enterprise. And the first part of it is to stop any further ISIS advance. We may be at that point, we may not. ISIS has surprised us on a number of occasions with their offensive capabilities.
We're speaking with retired Lieutenant General David Barno. He's a distinguished practitioner in residence at American University. And this morning, there's news out. The Wall Street Journal got an exclusive look at some material showing the U.S. wants to increase the number of drone flights by 50% from about 60 to 90 a day. And this comes just on the heels of the Air Force almost throwing in the towel because it didn't have the capability of manning that many flights, so to speak, from the ground-based pilots. And so do you think this proposed increase is maybe a way of dealing with ISIS and other things throughout the world, Ukraine and so on, that the United States really doesn't have the ground firepower or the will to take on as a military campaign?
Well, I think the U.S. has plenty of ground firepower, but I think this new initiative, I got to read this story this morning as well. The new initiative really suggests that the weapon of choice for this era is unmanned warfare, or is special operations forces, or is some way to not put tens of thousands of American troops on the ground as we've done in Iraq and Afghanistan for the last 15 years. So drones are one way that this administration, and I think every administration, is going to be very keen to be able to use, U.S. high technology and U.S. military power without putting Americans at risk. So this suggestion that we're going to increase the number of drone strikes or drone orbits, as they're called out there, by 50%, that's a huge deal. And it brings in the Army and it brings in special operations forces, according to the article, to help contribute to the pool of available drones around the world. There's an insatiable demand for drones. We're going to see this continue to go up and up and up in the coming years.
Now, there's a new Army chief, of course, as you mentioned, Mark Milley, General Milley. And so he and Dunford are dealing with this, and they're also dealing with the budget uncertainty. And we just had Steve Bell on from the Bipartisan Policy Center saying that he says there's a 50% chance of a government shutdown. So that means whatever initiatives the military might undertake under a regular budget could be put off for months. And so how does that affect all of the thinking, especially when you have brand new leadership at the very top of the Army and the chairman?
Well, I think the senior chiefs in the services are now, reluctantly of the opinion that the sequestration levels of budget cuts are going to be in place probably out till 2020. That's what that's what the congressional legislation was put in place in 2011 marked out there. I don't think anyone realistically think that's going to be repealed right now. The only bright spot in that horizon is that the so-called Overseas Contingency Operations, or OCO funds, which are supplemental funds that Congress ladles in the top of the defense budget every year, that's been a shock absorber for the services for these declining budgets or these flat budgets that sequestration brings. So there's actually every year a significant number, tens of billions of dollars that the services get for overseas operations such as the operation in Iraq right now that helps buffer against these cutbacks that they're facing in their base budget. So that's not insignificant either.
All right, so the outlook then is reliance on that, but really the policy question seems to be in limbo maybe until 2017?
I think for some time. I think you've got the very end of this administration. They're going to try and maintain their policies in place until they close out here. There's a new administration on the horizon. We don't know what that's going to look like, but realize all these new chiefs that are coming on board, and this is the biggest change out of the chiefs at one time in 39 years. My colleague, Dr. Ben Sahel, wrote with me recently about that. This is a big change in the service chiefs. They're going to be there for the most part, for four more years. So they'll be there well into the next administration. They're going to have to wrestle with this problem through this president and the next.
And from what you know of the new leadership, do they get along with one another? Will they be able to come to some kind of collective mind so that they can march forward with smoothness, knowing they're not arguing with one another?
I think they'll be feeling each other out here for the first few months, but I also think Secretary of Defense Ash Carter picked them to be an effective team that will work together and that will bring, you know, fresh thinking, new ideas into the Defense Department. Every single one of these chiefs so far has been an unconventional pick. The Marines didn't expect the choice that they had for the Commandant. The Army didn't expect General Milley to become the next chief. So Secretary Carter has been really looking carefully at trying to find choices for the service chiefs that are going to help bring this agenda of change forward. And part of that's dealing with ISIS. Part of it is personnel reforms that are bubbling right now in the Pentagon. Part of it is thinking about the future of warfare. So this is a very interesting team, a surprising team, and one that I think is going to bring a lot of innovative thought to the problems.
All right. We'll have to have you back as they proceed and see how it goes. Retired Lieutenant General Dave Barno is Distinguished Practitioner in Residence at American University. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tom.